Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. China has performed a masterstroke of diplomacy. It has brokered an agreement that will see Iran and Saudi Arabia again reestablish diplomatic relations. This could be a step not only to reorder the Middle East, but also usher in an era of stability in the region. Today, Washington is the odd man out. Crosstalking Peacemaking, I'm joined by my guest, Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran. He's a professor at the University of Tehran. In Beijing, we have Andy Malk. He is a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. And in Brussels, we cross to Pierre-Emmanuel Tolman. He is a lecturer at Lyon University. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Andy first in Beijing. It's an amazing story, a masterstroke of diplomacy. Like I said in my introduction, we get see a reordering of the Middle East and bringing stability there, which the Western powers have brought only instability for the last 50 years. So it's an amazing accomplishment. But how confident are you that arrangement will hold water, will move forward? Because you do know that there are many enemies of this gambit, and it will be tested. Go ahead, Andy.
No, that's absolutely true, Peter. So first of all, thank you for having me on. I think that this is a milestone. It is a breakthrough, but it is only a first step. And as you say, there are many, many challenges on the road ahead. And yet, I think it is cause for optimism and hope. As Wang Yi said, this is a victory for dialogue. This is a victory for peace. And we know that peace-loving countries all around the world support this, and countries that are more committed to violence and warfare do not. And we have to see how things ultimately play out. But again, I think it's cause for enormous optimism and hope today.
On that note, Mohammed in Tehran, what are your thoughts? I mean, you've been on this program since its inception, and we have talked about how Western meddling in the Middle East has caused so much tension, bloodshed, and just outright disaster for the region. This is an amazing step forward. Western media is never giving its the coverage it deserves here because it works so much against their narrative. Mohammed, your thoughts. Go ahead.
We have to remember that a bit over 3 years ago, the Saudis sent a letter to the Iraqi prime minister as a part of a process to bring about rapprochement. And General Soleimani traveled to Baghdad to meet the prime minister at 8 a.m. to discuss the letter, to find a solution between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And he was murdered by Trump. So after that, crime, a bit later, the Iraqis again tried to facilitate some sort of dialogue. Dialogue began between Iranian and Saudi officials. There was some progress, but they didn't go all the way. So what happened was that President Xi, when he went to Saudi Arabia, in discussions with Saudi leaders, they spoke about mediation. And before President Raisi's recent trip to Beijing for the state visit, the Chinese asked to see if the Iranians were ready for them to mediate, if they would accept Chinese mediation. And the Iranians, during the talks in Beijing, the Iranian president accepted. And after that, we saw intense negotiations in Beijing a week ago. And the results are that the two countries, Iran and Saudi Arabia, will restart ties. And that goes against the interests of the United States and the Israelis, and sadly, many in Europe who do not even understand what their own interests are.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. I was looking at some of the fine print that has been released here, and fundamentally, it is to respect each other's sovereignty. That's something that doesn't come out of Western capitals anymore, okay? Respecting each other's sovereignty, even when there are many, many problems still to need to be resolved. Let's go to Pierre-Emmanuel in Paris. You know, when I was reading accounts of this story when it was being broken, you know what thought came through my mind is Suez, 1956. And this is, I think, on that level here. To remind our audience, that's when the French and the British took over the Suez Canal, and the U.S. said, get the hell out of there. You're violating sovereignty here. And that was the end of the British and French in the Middle East from that time forward. I think what Beijing has done, an extraordinary accomplishment, is a 56 Suez moment. Go ahead, Pierre-Emmanuel.
I think you are right. This is reflecting a change in the geopolitical order at global level. And especially with the crisis in Ukraine, where behind the crisis in Ukraine, you have a rising confrontation between the United States and Russia, of course, but also potentially between the United States and China. Mm-hmm. And it means, at global level, that many theaters between powers, influence zones, can be subject to destabilization, to fragmentation, and become a theater of war. It can be the case of Caucasus, of Central Asia, the Balkans, but Ukraine, of course, Central and Eastern Europe, and also Middle East. And I think the Saudi and Iranian realized that in this rising confrontation between US and China and Russia, more or less on the other side, they will be the loser of a situation if they go at war each other between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And this is a way to avoid, to become a theater of confrontation, like in Ukraine, for example. I think there is also another factor, is that Saudi Arabia would try to promote regime change in Syria, of course, against Iranian influence. And they succeeded with Russia, and basically Bashar al-Assad the war with the Russians, and Saudi Arabia so abandoned his regime change policy and realized that the United States and Europeans cannot anymore influence in a major way Middle East and
Pierre-Emmanuel, the reason I agree with you, because American European position has not brought peace to the region. Okay, it hasn't. It, as a matter of fact, it has sabotaged peace for decades in the region, and that's why we all should welcome Beijing's gambit here. Andy, let me go to you. I mean, what's really important about this, and Western audiences are not going to be told this. That's why I'm telling anyone that's watching, is that China is not taking sides. See, the U.S. always takes sides and says it's a mediator, which is absolutely nonsense, okay? That's what makes, this is the beauty of the deal. If it works, but that's the beauty of it. China is saying, we are a real, honest broker. Andy.
No, that's absolutely correct. And I think not only does the U.S. take sides, it actually manifests a very arrogant and narcissistic view of the world, in that it is looking to promote what it calls democracy, quote unquote, universal human rights, which really is just a very narrow parochial view of the world, and impose that on the rest of the world through its efforts. And I, you know, recently tweeted that the problem with American leadership is its dubious character and even more dubious motivations. And we see that China is, its foreign policy, as you mentioned, is founded on mutual respect and respect for sovereignty. And I think it was Wang Yi also that said, right, each country must be free to choose its development path. And I think it's for this reason that countries like Iran, like Saudi Arabia, like Russia, like Ukraine, are willing to work with China because they do recognize that China does not have this arrogance or this narcissism, but indeed is trying to make the world a better place, a more peaceful place.
You know, Mohammed, you know, it's no secret the differences between Iran and Saudi Arabia. But, I mean, I respect both for coming to the table and talking about sovereignty and security. You can disagree on a lot of other things, but those are the two most important things, and it shows a lot of courage on both sides and on the side of China, because it's not going to be easy to do. They don't have hard power to enforce anything. It's their goodwill and their soft power. That's the difference between China now and the West today. Go ahead, Mohammed.
I think there's also another element as well, and that is that the United States is being seen increasingly as growing weak, but also the United States is being seen as indifferent towards its friends and allies. When the Americans withdrew from Afghanistan, they dumped their friends and allies. And countries like Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and others across the world took note of that. And while the Iranian-Saudi negotiations were taking place in Beijing last week, we saw Georgia and the events in Georgia and how a government and parliament that is friendly to the West,
right,
and no ally of the Russians, how it was severely attacked by the Americans and the Europeans simply because they wanted to impose their sovereignty, and simply because they were not 100% obedient. And the Saudis take note of that. Even being friendly to the United States does not mean that you're safe and secure from the wrath of the Americans and NATO and the EU.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on peacemaking. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing peacemaking. Okay, let's go back to Brussels. Pierre-Emmanuel, I keep stressing peacemaking here, and with rapprochement of the Saudis and the Iranians, we have the possibility of finally bringing peace to Yemen, and I think that's an important part of what the derivative outcome of this peace process could be. And that would be something that would be absolutely needed, obviously, for the people of Yemen, but could diffuse other conflicts in the region, which have been stoked, again, I'll say, by Western powers for decades. So this is an opening, an opportunity to end a conflict that has drawn on way too long. Go ahead in Brussels.
Yes, that's right. This is an opening, but we're going to see it's going to be implemented because, as you said, there are many opponents to this deal. I think there was another factor we didn't mention is that the United States wanted to put pressure on Saudi Arabia on oil prices ricochet to punish Russia as well. And the Saudis refused also because they don't want U.S. to have too much leverage on the oil prices. And the rising of Asia as power broker with China is not only action of a single country, China, but it's also an alternative to Western globalization, which is emerging with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, right, for example, and all Asiatic countries would like to join because it's not dominated by Western institutions, mainly U.S., but also member states in Europe, U.K., France, Germany. And they would like to resolve their problems more peacefully with balance of power and not within a Western institution were created by the U.S. and Europeans like United Nations, which is mainly a Western globalization. And China, of course, is taking the lead in this alternative globalization in Eurasia. And we are going to see if this will lead to over openings and resolution of conflicts between also China and Pakistan, for example. We've noticed that Pakistan was quite happy also with this deal, so we can have an effect, domino effect.
It can have a demonstration effect for the entire region and far beyond. Let's go back to Andy in Beijing. Beijing is on kind of a peacemaking tour. I mean, it had a 12-point program for Ukraine. Again, Western capitals dismissed it out of hand. They probably didn't even read it. Okay, let's be honest, okay? And then we have this breakthrough with the Saudi Arabia in Iran. I mean, the world is beginning to pay attention. You know, there are some countries that use their military leverage to divide countries, to start colored revolutions and whatnot. And Beijing, as a disinterested partner, I mean, you know, they have equal distance from the partners that are negotiating. And that is a demonstration effect that the world can look to, because the world has become extremely unstable with NATO's war against Russia. And we've seen how the global south, or the global majority, as I like to call it, is reacting. So we're at an inflection point here, I think. Andy?
We absolutely are. And I think I also want to go back to a point that was made earlier, that China is an honest broker, and it does rely on moral suasion, but that is not enough. China also brings, I think, some very important material advantages to the table as well. So, of course, China's market for oil is important for Saudi Arabia, for Iran, but also China's ability to deliver high-quality, complex infrastructure projects, whether we're talking about 5G or more traditional types of infrastructure, ports, et cetera, on time and on budget, are very valuable incentives that complement, I think, its honest broker status. And it's because of this that we are seeing this example effect. And I completely agree with you, Peter, that the world needs great examples, needs to be inspired. And, you know, hopefully the good guys are winning, and the warmongers, the people that engage in subversion, interference in other countries' affairs, will start to, you know, diminish.
You know, I agree. Mohammed, also in the fine print here is that Saudi Arabia, with its kind of tango with Israel and the Abraham Accord, so-called, which I think is just an excuse for the U.S. to stay in the Middle East and their pliant minions in the region. But the through this process of mediation is that Saudi Arabia has to first recognize an independent Palestinian state, which is, again, putting it back on the agenda where the West so conveniently likes to forget about it. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Yes, the United States would like to see divisions in the region, as many as possible. And the objective of the United States is to have the Israeli apartheid regime have domination over the neighboring countries. And it's quite interesting that these talks and the agreement between Iran and Saudi Arabia in Beijing, it almost comes at the worst possible moment for the United States and the Israelis. On the one hand, you see a extremely right-wing government in power in Tel Aviv, a government that even its Western allies are having difficulty not criticizing. They don't traditionally criticize the regime, but it's becoming so bad that even in the United States, you see criticism of the current regime, the Netanyahu regime. And that is the behavior of Israel right now is making it increasingly difficult for countries in the Arab world, among others, to maintain ties with the regime. So it actually, this rapprochement with Iran puts the Saudis in a much better position with regards to American pressure to move towards Israel, and it marginalizes the Israeli regime even more. So it works to Iran's benefit in further marginalizing the regime. And in addition to that, the United States benefits from all these divisions. It sells weapons. It is able to support wars. We know that the genocidal war in Yemen was given a green light. I mean, the Americans gave the Saudis a green light. Obama gave Saudis a green light to carry out, to initiate the war. It came roughly during the time when we were in Vienna for the JCPOA nuclear negotiations. So the Americans, they lose the military-industrial complex, loses money. The Israeli regime becomes more marginalized. And the United States, which is already on the decline, has further difficulties in the region. And now we see this banking crisis in the United States. Nothing is looking good for the Americans, whether in West Asia or across the world.
You know, Pierre Emmanuel, you brought it up earlier, which I think is really fascinating. And, you know, Andy is also an expert in globalization. But there are multiple globalizations going on. The one inspired by the West is broken down. It's failed because it doesn't serve everyone. But we now have in Asia, we have some the most important countries. You mentioned Pakistan. Iraq is also part of this here. You know, it took a long time. But I've always said on my program here, if you give the players in the region with outside interference and outsiders choosing sides and having a broker like China come in, not choosing sides, and not completely disinterested. Here, building infrastructure, you make money. I agree with Andy's point there. But this it gives globalization a new lease on life because it's reducing tensions. And that's what you need for a successful globalization. Go ahead, in Brussels.
Yes, that's right. Actually, China promoted its Silk Road project as an alternative to Western globalization because United States and its European allies were the masters of maritime lanes. And in case of conflict, China could be blocked on the seas. So it needs a continental approach for its trade and also for its alliances. And at the same time, Russia also promoted Greater Eurasia project, which is in synergy with China, but at the same time connecting with India to counterbalance also China, because even if Russia and China are together in an alliance to get out Western powers out of Eurasia, they also are competitors. But what if we see there between Russia, India, China, Pakistan, Iraq, now Iran, it's like a balancing power. Yep. And instead of trying to impose a unipolar world, is to accept multipolarity. And multipolarity means stability there.
You know, Andy, we have one more minute here. So we have the mediation at the behest of Beijing. We have a Ukraine peace plan. What else is on the agenda? Because I'm sure you watch Western media. China's getting ready to conquer the world. You know, it's the contrast couldn't be greater. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, I think one very important point to mention is the decline of the dollar and the rise of the UN in the Middle East. We see with Xi's trip, Saudi Arabia, other countries in the region are now increasingly willing to use the UN in settlement for oil. And I think this will have profound repercussions that will be reinforced by China's diplomatic initiatives in the region as well.
Yeah, but also, again, you know, I like to stress, you know, talking about national security it comes about when you have sovereignty and when you have free trade. You don't live in a world where you're sanctioned because of quote-unquote bad behavior when the country that is sanctioning you is committing even worse behavior here. This is a segue out of this dead end that we've seen in the post-war era. And I think it's this mediation between Saudi Arabia and Iran is a very good first step. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Tehran, Brussels, and in Beijing. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.